at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, the original Baltimore Positives. Always when Don Moeller's involved, he'll be involved in this one because I'm wearing the Fadley shirt, established in 1887. They're shipping those delicious crab cakes. And one of the inspirations, along with our friends over Costas, for me doing the Crab Cake Conversation Tour that we're beginning here in a couple of weeks. We postponed a couple of dates. We got some dates set in July. We're going to cross our fingers, make sure the crab prices are where they need to be. But even if they're not, we're going to be doing this tour in August, talking about crabs, where they come from and how they're picked and how they make their way into your belly and all of the spices, including the beer that makes them taste so delicious. State Fair was the place we did that 2 weeks ago. We're off to a great start. That was outdoor, unmasked, having fun. Still owes me a margarita over at El Guapo. Don, your son Jeff is trying to muscle up and sell my condo. So I just want to say Moeller and Gary Realty is there. I invited Jeff on the show this week. I was desperate for guests on Monday, so I reached to him and you, and you actually did the show. We did the recon together on guns and all that. And you know what he said to me? Too busy. Can't do the show this week. Too busy selling houses, is what he told me.
It's great. Well, then tell him, look, everybody who's watching us on YouTube or Facebook, that view you see is outside of Nestor's window. Am I correct, Nestor?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yes, please. They say it's a million-dollar view. It's yeah. Available at half price right now.
Give Jeff Moeller a call. Well, we've got a show today, Nestor, do we not?
Well, it's one of your favorites. You know, anytime we sort of peel back the onion, it's always my favorite to talk to journalists because we're the last barrier left. You know, they're pulling planes out of the sky in Belarus to make sure people like Josh Kurtz don't get his 2 cents in. But always great to have a fellow journalist on. And I stand in, yeah, you know, Don, you know this. I have massive respect for the people that cover the important stuff. I mean, I spent my life at the ballpark and they threw me out of there. You can only imagine what they would have done to me at the State House.
They wouldn't have let you down in the pit. You wouldn't have been allowed in the dungeon. But it is, we're always delighted when Josh Kurtz, founder of Maryland Matters, stops by. And Josh, you've been making all kinds of news lately. It's like there's always something new in Maryland Matters. And in the past, I would have said Josh Kurtz, founder and editor. But we've sort of shifted roles a little bit. So I want to give you a moment or two on Baltimore Positive to remind folks what Maryland Matters is. I always want to give you the opportunity to tell folks how they can partner with you and contribute, because that's so important if we're going to have nonprofit journalism. So talk about all that, but talk about your new role and why you decided to make the change that you did.
Wow. Well, lots to talk about. And Don, Nestor, thank you for the platform, as always, and for inviting me on. So Maryland Matters is a four-year-old nonprofit news website focused largely on state government and politics, but we branch out into covering important issues. We sort of dive bomb into local government stuff every now and then. We have a small staff of six journalists, but I like to say we punch above our weight and, knock wood. We're doing all right financially. People are reading. People are enjoying what we're doing. And it's been very gratifying to see the progress.
Yeah, I began this thing, toy department with sports back in, it's my 30th year. It'll be 30 years of December 13th since I started doing this. And people said, well, it was only a baseball team. It's not really a sports town. And then, well, I'm like, well, the Terps, and we got the Skipjacks and, you know, the Bandits after that and the Blast. And there's local this and high school that. And all the Moeller's nephews are playing lacrosse. And they were all going to go to Virginia, win championships. All that stuff was going on at the time.
Hey, don't forget now. Don't forget the ladies. We also, my niece won a championship at Carolina as well. So
we don't talk about Carolina.
We had those female lacrosse players as well running up and down the field.
To my point, there was all of this going on. The football team comes and all of a sudden, boom, it was no longer crazy to talk about making sports radio or sports talk or sports journalism a business. I guess it was always a business in that ABC Wide World of Sports wanted it and every newspaper had a section in it and the tire dealers wanted a. You know, I worked at the paper for years. I never, as a kid, understood how they made money or how I made fun of the people that sold the ads until I became one of them on this side. What funds all of this? And I think so few Americans understand any of this or even understand how Fox News or CNN or MSNBC or whatever their flavor is powered by, or which Russian government's funding what NRA and OAN and all the rest of that. But locally, for the things that are so important, I mean, I got Brandon Scott fighting with the half of Fells Point right now. The State House is fighting with the city. All this stuff is going on. But people don't like bad news being written about them or their friends, and funding all of that and finding people to believe in journalism. I know we talked about Save Our Son and all of that, but for any local organization to be doing the heavy lifting and probably pissing some people off along the way, because that's part of how you do it. If you want an audience, right? Speak to that in the modern vernacular, that if you 4 years ago decided to say, we're going to start to do this, at some point we need people to care, to read it, but we need to eat. And I know you say not for profit. That's an important part of what you do.
Right. Well, when I and folks I work with were trying to build Maryland Matters, we really had two goals. One was obviously the fundraising part, which I'll talk about in a minute. The other was really just sort of building credibility. And we were lucky because, you know, I was known in sort of political circles in Maryland for my coverage back in the day of the State House. And some of the other people who were involved in our enterprise also were experienced journalists. So that sort of brought us instant credibility, which was nice. Then we had to sort of figure out how to fund it. And when we started, we had almost no funding, and I was putting stuff out on a voluntary basis, basically. I had a day job in D.C. and just put stuff out when I could. But over a period of months, we raised enough money that we could hire a couple of full-time reporters. And we've sort of, that was at the beginning of 2018, and we've sort of grown since then. And, you know, very broadly speaking, we follow kind of an NPR model where we get some support, a little over half, I think, from philanthropies, foundations. And then the rest comes from just sort of, shaking the tin cup and asking our readers to support us. And luckily, even through the pandemic and this downturn, they've valued our work enough to keep us afloat. And we've grown, and our news staff has doubled in just a little over a year. So that's where we're at.
It's more toward you even on where newspapers came from originally, right? And I was a newspaper guy, and you know that, and Josh, you as well. But the genesis of all of this, and I never made it down to the newsium, and you can smack me around. Don, you're shaking your head at me. You're upset at me.
Oh, been there. People have heard me say, first of all, I like a lot of different types of museums, and the fact that we have great museums in Baltimore, we've talked about, wonderful in DC, but near the top, I it's like crab cakes. I don't like to rate them. I see Josh nodding his head. Near the top for me was the newsium. I loved every
and I never made
thing
it right
about it.
And it doors are shuttered. I saw they were selling off parts of the facade and all this stuff, but I would think it started in this, and I'm proud of what I've done here with what I'm doing with Baltimore Positive and moving my little AM radio brand and creating a competitor and an FM, like all of that. But I think about it in terms of starting over again for myself and for someone like you, that people like us can do that in the way that you might not have needed to have been Rockefeller to have a press in the basement in East Baltimore and start up the News Post or the Sun. I don't know what A.S. Abel's thing was, but everyone that started a publication, I mean, Jan Wenner, Rolling Stone, whatever it was, right. The Village Voice, in modern vernacular, the City Paper was started by a couple of hippies, back in that this is what the new thing is, right? For information, trusted information.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. In this digital era, it's actually less expensive because you don't need a printing press, and that makes a difference, I think. But
Josh, did you? I'm fascinated. Known you for a long time. We've never actually talked about this aspect. Looking back, I've always said Nestor, no doubt, he's an entrepreneur.
Right.
Other people in my life, the former school superintendent in Baltimore County. It was controversial. Stuart Berger, who's a friend of mine until this day, extremely controversial. Friends of mine who hear me saying that are ready to wring my neck now, say, how can you be friends with Stuart? And I said, well, he's just a good friend. You just have to get over it. But he, at his core, was an entrepreneur. I know I am not. My son is. Did you see yourself as an entrepreneurial kind of guy coming up through journalism, or was this like, holy cow, now I've got to raise money?
No, God, quite the contrary. And, you know, it amazes me to this day that that this has become sort of like a part of my own life. And, you know, a funny story, when I was in college, I got a job as a canvasser for an environmental organization, and I had to go door to door, you know, telling people about the group and asking for money. I lasted on that job 1 week.
You weren't selling encyclopedias, is what you're telling me.
No, I lasted on the job 1 week, and I spent the rest of the summer working at a Taco Bell, and that seemed like a more rewarding experience. And now,
Josh, all I ever wanted to do was be Oscar Madison, you know, be John Steadman, have my picture in the corner, and get a gold watch, and like, it didn't work out that way. I don't think for anyone in journalism, you know, I mean, I literally this morning I got a resume from a nice young man, went to Towson. His whole resume is just writer. I'm a writer. And I'm like, well, that's great. You're 22. You better figure something else out. You know what I mean? I mean, like, literally, there better be another club in your bag.
Right.
That's a great way to put it. Well, speaking of other clubs in the bag, Nestor, Josh, you've made some changes. You were the editor. You're stepping aside from that. You've got a new editor, and I will let you sing her praises a bit, because I know you're delighted. But talk about why you decided you were the boss, man. You were the editor, and now you're going to drop back a little bit and write some deep and philosophical stuff. What prompted all that?
Well, I think the genesis is really for some of the same reasons we were discussing already. It's like, I don't really see myself as an entrepreneur. I don't, you know, ultimately see myself as a boss. I really just see myself as a journalist and a writer. And I was kind of looking for an opportunity to do as much writing as I could, which was a challenge when I was managing a nonprofit and running the day-to-day editorial operations. And so we had some funders come to us and propose a sort of long-term project on climate change. And, it was a very generous offer. And the more I sort of thought about how we could make it work within the small structure we have at Maryland Matters, the more I thought, well, I've had some experience covering, energy and environment issues, and, maybe I should do the bulk of that work. And so, eventually, we decided to turn the day-to-day operations of Maryland Matters over to my deputy, Danielle Gaines, who is terrific. She's also a veteran State House reporter. She was at the Frederick News Post for many years covering the State House for them and local politics and cops and courts, too. And she's been with us for 3 years now and been my deputy for almost a year. And it just seemed like, well, let's see what happens. Let's turn over the day-to-day to Danielle. I'll dive into this project. I'll still obviously have, you know, some long-term planning duties, some administrative duties, some fundraising duties. I'm still going to write a political column, cover some politics, but I'm going to spend a chunk of my time every month just generating a long-form piece on climate change in Maryland. And the goal is to sort of talk about what will it take to make Maryland a leader in climate change policy?
Well, what a great segue. And if you're just joining us, we are with Josh Kurtz, founder of Maryland Matters, previously the editor, now stepping back and becoming still the founder and a lot of the other work he just talked about, including the fundraising side, but really, again, flexing his journalistic chops. And the first piece on climate change, you know, Josh, one of the things that I'm struck by when I read that piece, and we're going to have you walk us through that piece a little bit, because I think our listener, Nestor's really become interested in this whole climate, environmental thing.
Well, I mean, part of the crab cake tour, Josh, is going over to the Eastern Shore and seeing what's going on in Chestertown. I saw Heather Mazur doing something over there, and how, you know, the people in the boats waving the red flags own the land adjacent to the water that 6, 8, 10 years from now, one storm, I mean,
that's right.
So all of
no
that,
one's more affected by this than our state because of the waterways.
Very true.
You write this piece and it all comes together. And I think Nestor just captured it. It all comes together. And you write a piece that, quite honestly, in a traditional newspaper would not have been published. It may have been that piece in itself may have been a series, but they're not going to, I don't know how many words it was, Josh, but it was like
6,000.
It's not USA Today worthy Axios worthy.
So what they say, Josh, in the old days, they'd say, can you get that in 30 inches?
That's like 30,000 maybe. I don't know.
Start us at the beginning, because I love the way it begins, because I live right near the airport. Yeah. And I thought, man, I wonder if folks know this. You say, you climb up to the captain's bridge on a replica of a Coast Guard cutter, but hold on tight. It can be a wild ride. And then the next thing you know, you're off the coast. So talk about this nondescript building near the airport where you take this wild ride. What the heck was that?
Well, just spoiler alert, I'll say the 6,000 word piece was about the prospect of bringing offshore wind energy off the coast of Ocean City. But yeah, the piece begins, there happens to be, and who knew, I just learned this in the course of reporting this, there is a maritime training center, in Linthicum Heights near BWI Airport. And, you know, it's used by, boat captains, governments. I mean, they do maritime trade unions. They just do a bunch of trainings over there. And for the last several months, I guess, one of the two big wind energy companies has set up a simulation so that boat captains can come in and basically steer their boats through a simulated wind farm out in the ocean. And so it's really extraordinary. And when I was there, they had two models. One was a big Coast Guard cutter, and you climb up into the captain's bridge, and there's, you know, I'm so bad at nautical terms, but, you know, there's the steering wheel and there's all the buttons and levers and stuff, and you just find yourself driving, and they simulate, you know, different wave heights, different weather conditions, night, day, different wind conditions, and you're kind of navigating through these turbines, you know, that are projected onto 8 giant screens. And we have in our piece a video of the simulation. So it's very cool. And it was a very cool experience. In a smaller room, they have a smaller, like fishing trawler. And that also gives you an idea of what it's like to navigate through the windmills there. So that was how the piece opened. And it was just, some of the most fun I've had as a reporter. It was very cool.
Oh, it was a terrific opening. And again, I want to encourage folks, if Maryland Matters is not on your phone or is not on your laptop, make sure you download it today. Make it one of your go-tos every morning, and you're going to get all kinds of valuable information. And this latest article by Josh Kurtz is just a great example. Josh, I was trying out of the 6,000 words to think, what are the big themes here that our listeners would want to zero in on? I'm going to throw some out, and you say, no, Don, you're all wet. Let me straighten you out. Let me educate you and your listeners. So I'm thinking that what I walk away from, a couple of points. One, Maryland is behind its neighbors in this effort, that you would think with the Chesapeake Bay and being along the Atlantic Ocean, we should pridefully be a leader in this area, and we're not. That was one point it came across. Then I've got this proposal that you put forward, or you analyze that there. Basically, it seems to me two major companies that have projects in the approval process, and now we're into the battle that we always get into. I'll call it politely NIMBYism. The Ocean City and the Chamber folks have decided, for whatever reason, maybe we ought to get Rick Meehan on and give him equal time, yeah, because it doesn't make sense to me, and I like Rick, and I'll be glad to give him equal time. They've decided that these things are ugly, that they're going to hurt tourism, that fishermen don't like them because they're going to be disruptive to the fishing industry. And then I guess the final piece that I walk away from is, it's so frustrating to me, and Governor, please come on anytime, that once again, we're getting a little hokey pokey from Governor Hogan, where I'm for this, but when it comes to real action, I veto this. I'm all for wind energy, but every time he has to take significant action, he vetoes it. And we were making good progress under O'Malley, and boom, we've sort of ground to a halt. Those are some takeaways. Am I all wet, or am I nailing some stuff there?
No, I think you're about right. Yeah. Maryland was one of the first states to actually pass legislation to enable offshore wind energy. And it's the federal government that actually is leasing. You know, if you go up and down the Atlantic seaboard, it's the federal government that's leasing, that has these lease sites that they're leasing to big companies to set up wind energy. But each state is sort of acting as the broker, they're sort of, the early evaluator of the projects.
Are all of these profitable, by the way? I mean, the other places have been done?
Well,
I mean, you could say ugly or not ugly, but relative value?
Nestor, it's so new in the U.S. that we can't say, but certainly in Europe, it's...
I went to Hawaii and I went to Maui. Right. Yeah. And I landed in Maui, and I don't know if you've ever been to Maui. I was lucky enough to go about a year and a half ago. You land, you feel like you're in Nebraska. Like, it's crazy. I landed, I'm like, are we in the right place? Like, I'm like, where are we?
Right.
And it has four different climates and just a tiny little island. Mm-hmm. But if you're on the south side of the west part of the island, if you're driving toward Kanapale, there are cliffs with giant turbines on there now.
Right.
I don't want to say I was shocked to see them because it's Maui and it's paradise or whatever, but I thought to myself, all right, these people are out here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. They have a limited amount of resources to do anything. I'm sure it would make cost of living there either good or the bad, depending on how much land you own there and whether you really wanted people like me to show up and want to live there, because I sort of didn't want to leave. Yeah. No offense to Baltimore positive, but I thought Maui positive would be a better way to go.
I looked
up there and I thought, all right, they're here. They're saving somebody some money. They're making somebody some money. They're kind of ugly, you know, whatever they are. But they're not stopping me from coming to Maui, and they're not stopping me from buying a place in Maui. And certainly if it makes it $100 a year more affordable to be in Maui, or $100 a month for my air conditioning, if you have such a thing, you get on the right cliff there, you might not need air conditioning if you do it right. Mm-hmm. But I saw them in Maui. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, they put them on the hill in Maui, and I know it pissed people off, and I know all the indigenous, I started reading about all of it because I'm like, how did they get there? And because I ask these questions, because Bill Cole sponsors all of this, and he does Gordian Energy and solar. So I'm always looking for solar and figuring all this out, because I think drilling holes in the ground for oil is probably a bad idea. I sort of figured that out back around 79 or 80 when the hostages were released. So I would just say, like, it is going on in places, and I'm fascinated to see where it happens and where it doesn't happen, and how much of this and this red and blue and money and the fist fight that if O'Malley would have hung on, or if Hogan wouldn't have happened, that all this probably would have happened here, right?
Well, I'd say two quick things. One is we do have some on land wind energy here, particularly out like in Garrett County. There's a bunch up in the hills there.
I'll find it in August. Never been to Garrett County. This is my time to go. You know.
But in the U.S., offshore wind energy, there are literally only 7 wind turbines in the water right now, 5 off of Rhode Island and 2 off of Virginia. So that is very new. And you can't, right now we're going through a federal approval process that's been slow but seems to be speeding up. But there are definitely things that the Hogan administration could have done to build the industry faster and you know, anticipate the their coming fast.
To be the leader that he likes bragging about. I saw on Facebook today, they went from 49th to 7th and something.
Right.
Funded by somebody.
Right.
Well,
right.
Well, Josh, get to the specifics then on because Nestor even, in, you know, said, well, even if they're ugly, my sense is, and I sit on, I love Ocean City. I have friends that have a place in Bethany. I love sitting on the beach in Bethany. Obviously, the president likes Rehoboth, so he's going to sit on the beach in Rehoboth. I don't get a sense that when you would sit there and look at these things, I don't know, what are they, 18 miles out, Josh? Is that what we're talking?
According
to your article?
They'll be... the first batch, assuming they come in the middle of this decade, will be anywhere from like 17 to 20 miles offshore.
Okay.
Boat that had the Trump for president thing that passed me 88 times last year, and we're selling crabs here, and this buffet's on sale, and come on by and buy a T-shirt and fly a kite. It blows my mind. Like, you know, like the eye clutter that happens on a beach and you're going to be upset about turbines. I mean, to me, that's just BS.
I mean, frankly, I think they're going to barely be visible most of the time from you know, the Ocean City boardwalk or pier, you know?
That was my thought. When I said, and I actually, we had this discussion because when you're sitting on the beach, you talk about anything, you know, you're talking about this and that and,
well, they hope
movies.
You're talking about the plane that's flying.
Well,
by,
the plane
right?
with the banner. But you do very often we will see a ship, you know, come by or a larger boat. And we will have that say, I wonder how far that is because I can barely see that. So I think your point.
And sometimes it's a Navy boat. You see it. It's so huge. Right. Or, you know, you see a boat that you realize that's a big boat. And it's way out there. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually with the piece, we ran a picture that the town of Ocean City is generating of what the view is going to look like. And even then you really have to squint and they're the opponents.
Very, very hard to see. Josh, cut to the chase again, because what I liked about the article, it had so much data and so much information, so well researched, so really well done. Kudos to you and whoever came to you with this idea, kudos to them. Cause we need more information about climate, not less. What kind of impact? I think this is what people will ask. And some of this was in your article. Well, really won't be that big a deal because you'll have to transport the stuff from Trade Point Atlantic down there.
Right.
It's not even going to be a positive event for the climate change issue. What kind of impact, what kind of energy could we potentially generate in Maryland?
Well, I think initially there are two projects that will be out in the ocean eventually. One is going to generate enough energy to power 80,000 homes a year. The other, I think, is about 35,000 homes a year, and that's energy that's largely coming from, you know, coal or nuclear now. I mean, those are the two big sources of electricity in Maryland now. So that's, you know. In other words, there'll be fewer fossil fuels being burned, plain and simple.
Well, it seems significant. But before we jump off this topic, you've been gracious with your time. What if you had to guess, if you were a gambling man and you went to Vegas, when do you think I might be able to read my book and look out on the horizon and see some wind energy things in Ocean City?
Well, one company says they think they can have it by 2024. The other company says by 2026. I mean, you know, with all due respect, that may be a little optimistic, but I think, you know, certainly latter part of this decade, you'll see them there. Or not see them, as the case may be.
Don and I had an argument this week on the Recon about elections and the results of elections, and we're about to have every Westmore and every Tom Perez, all the people that have been stopping by Rosemont, they're all running. We're going to have them all on crab cake up with all of them. But you know, I think about the red line in the city. I think about things that happened or didn't happen, and I go back again with my sports in regard to football teams leaving, football teams coming, baseball teams, stadiums, all of these huge tectonic plates in all of our lives, right? Really drawn up by these elections,
right? Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, I think one of the reasons now the federal government is approving some of these projects faster is because Biden won the election and not Trump. And, you know, I think if a Democrat is elected governor, there'll be more done to sort of ease the transition here. So, I mean, without a doubt. So, yes, here's another example.
I think it will be an absolute issue. Josh, before I ask you a gubernatorial question, what other topics are on your horizon for this new special project that you're involved in? What other things can readers of Maryland Matters expect to see in the future?
Well, it's going to be a combination of stuff. Sometimes we'll be looking at new technologies. Sometimes we'll be looking at just sort of what's being done in Maryland academia to get things going. Sometimes we'll be looking at communities that have been impacted by climate change. And sometimes we'll just be looking at, you know, political food fights. So it's going to be, I think, a pretty nice combination.
Well, it's the issue of our times, right? Literally, right? It's the biggest issue of our time, climate change. I think
arguably so, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we're not going to have Josh Kurtz on here without taking at least 2 or 3 minutes and running over his time an initial take on the gubernatorial comings and goings in the state. It's beginning to heat up. Josh, yeah. I know you follow this stuff closely. Nestor follows it. I said to someone today that one of my early takes, and I'm curious what your early take is that Wes Moore came out of the box much more aggressively and in some ways much more sophisticated in terms of his particularly fundraising outreach in 24 hours of his announcement, looking much more like a Jamie Hairston, a Ralph Warnock, a John Ossoff, much more of a national campaign fundraising mechanism. And I thought that we really haven't seen that often in Maryland. And it got my attention. I thought, whoa, it's a little different for a gubernatorial race. What was your take on that?
Well, I agree. I think his rollout was impressive. If your listeners and viewers haven't seen his 2.5 minute campaign video, I mean, it's one of the best I've seen in a while.
Well, we're a flip state now, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's muscle that up. I like the sound of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and I think the national attention and the national fundraising is good. But, you know, ultimately, it's the voters of Maryland who have the say. So we shouldn't get too blinded by the fact that, you know, he's like going on Morning Joe the day after he announces and stuff like that. He's still going to have to get it done with the voters of Maryland. I think he's got like a tremendously high upside, but he's also unproven, and, you know, unproven candidates often fail.
Josh, you're a seasoned political observer. How important is it, do you think, and as you say, the proof will be in the taste of the pudding as we go forward, how important is it that he will be the sole, at least appears to be, the sole candidate with Baltimore roots from the Baltimore region? How important will that be in Maryland gubernatorial politics?
I think it's pretty significant. I think Mike Rosenbaum might argue with your characterization, Don.
Fair point.
But I think it's quite significant. Obviously, I think Peter Francho will have some pockets of support in your home county. That could also be significant. But yeah, I think it's going to help Moore a lot.
Josh, I want to ask you, what does it mean that Johnny O stays out, that Barry Glassman stays out, that, you know, other, who's in and who's out? I mean, I'll ask you the Chris Van Hollen Schoolhouse Rock question. Let's start with this. Give me the racing form on this as you see it.
Okay. Well, you know, we just published a poll the other day that a state senator conducted, and, you know, it's so early, it's really hard to say that it's a, you know, it tells you a lot. But, you know, at the top of our poll in the Democratic race was Rush Earnbaker, the former Prince George's exec who ran last time. And he was, I think, around 21%. And I think that's largely a function of name recognition, particularly in the D.C. area. Comptroller Peter Francho is next at 17%. Tom Perez, the former DNC chair, was next at a little over 10. and everyone else was way down in single digits. But also, you know, so we've got Wes Moore running, we've got former Attorney General Doug Gansler running, we've got Mike Rosenbaum running, we've got a young man named Ashwani Jain running who worked in the Obama administration. We have John King, the former state U.S. Education Secretary under Obama, running, and John Barron, who's a former Clinton administration official, running. So, assuming Perez enters, there'll be at least 9 Democrats. On the Republican side, State Commerce Secretary Kelly Schultz seems like the front runner for now.
She seems to have that lane all to herself, right?
She may.
It looks like she may be able to sort of waltz on into the general. That's a nice position to be if you don't have to spend a lot of money in a primary.
Where's Michael Steele in all this, Josh?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I think there's still a chance Michael Steele gets in, but you know, he would be an appealing candidate in many ways. I think it's hard to see him winning a Republican primary under the current state of the GOP. But you know, anything's
possible. What's your first sign?
My first sign
of Michael Steele.
Oh, of whether he's going to run or not?
Yeah, well, that he would face strong opposition in his own party.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No, I mean, as Nestor knows, I've been wrong before. I don't play fantasy football. I don't play fantasy baseball. I'm not good. I don't go to the blackjack table, so I don't bet on politics. But every instinct that I have, and we consider Michael Steele a friend. He's been on the show a number of times. I can't envision a political climate where he gets through a Republican primary. And I think every Democrat would tell you, if they were being honest and they didn't want to be quoted on this, that he's the Republican they'd least likely try to win again. They think he would be a pretty formidable candidate in a general election. But in this crazy post-celebrity president environment in which we live, I'm not sure he can get through. So, Nestor, again, I think today we've had science class, we've had government class, we've had journalism class. I think we've touched them all, and we'll have Josh back on from time to time to
give me one more thing to stoke the fire when I'm on the Eastern Shore talking about the wind turbines down in Ocean City. That'll make me popular. They'll have me. They'll throw me out of the state. They'll make me go to Rehoboth from now on, or up in Bethany somewhere.
Hey, Josh, one last shout out. Where can people go contribute to Maryland Matters to keep this thing going?
Thank you. Yes, you can find us online, MarylandMatters.org.
There you go, folks.
Appreciate you, Josh. Thanks for coming on. We'll stay in touch here as the gubernatorial race heats up and hopefully there's a crab cake involved in this thing for you and me somewhere along the line. All right.
I look forward to that.
You got a crab cake spot, or are you going to be a politician and punt on that?
You know, it's funny because I was thinking about about Tom Perez's answer, because we're neighbors in Tacoma Park, and he suggested Franklin's in Hyattsville, which is a great spot. I don't think of it as a crab cake spot, though. You know, in the D.C. area, I would say Jerry Seafood and Bowie is maybe the
place to
go.
Nestor, that better be like number one on your list.
You know who plugged it this week? So I got into it with Luke about baseball this week, and I try not to talk to Mueller about baseball, I swear. But when I did, we started talking about the Bowie Bay Sox. So I called Phil Rye, assistant GM down there. He did 45 minutes. My wife and I are talking about going and seeing Rodriguez pitch next week when the New Hampshire team's in town. And I said to him, you know, Bowie, like crab bomb. And he's like, Jerry's. And I'm like, all right, man, it's enough. You know, like all of you PG people down there, you know, you know what I told him? I'll tell you the same thing. I'll insult all of you. When I'm thinking of getting a crab cake, I ain't thinking of driving toward DC. And if I am, I'm probably stopping the car in Linthicum. You know, that's about as far as I'm going to go. Literally,
this one is worth the extra mile.
All right. You guys are still as close to the Chesapeake as we are. Hey. It's just, Redskins fans and Nationals fans, I think wine and cheese, not crab cakes and beer.
I can hear my buddy from up above, Wayne Curry, saying, Nestor, you ain't knowing what you're missing, buddy.
He must have been a fan, right, Don?
Oh, he loved him some Jerry's.
Yeah, yeah.
When I would go down and hang with Wayne, we would be at Jerry's.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Crab bombs and Media Matters and former Baltimore County Executive Don Mueller, our partner in crime. You can find all of our coverage out at BaltimorePositive.com. At some point, Jeff Mueller is going to sell my condo and throw me out of my office. Speaking of my office, I want to give a major shout out to my man, David Knoll at MOI. They call it Moi, but I call it Maryland Office Interiors. Got me my new desk. It's all set up. He's a guest on the program this week. I hope you check that out as well. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat, anywhere Don Mueller is, at a DMueller5 on the Twitter thing. We are together, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive.